We do know that you're an New York City Council member, you're of course the mayor, and you have a crucial fourth vote. Perhaps it's only a third vote because Scott Kennedy has indeed said he does not favor a winter campground on that site. But you have a crucial voice here, and for you to come in and indicate that the most natural thing in the world is to close the campground, because even if the Citizens Committee consents and makes a verbal contract with the campers that they can blithely violate it, because you can come in and just say, well, there has been no positive action by City Council permitting the campground, therefore we're going to reverse a policy that we've been following for the last year and a half, and essentially order it closed and order the police in. Although I noticed you said that you weren't ordering the police in, it was the city staff that was ordering the police in, which I found a rather sleazy way of avoiding responsibility for the police. So I must admit, you did come out up front and you came to the campground and you talked to the campers, and then the campers respected you for that. And I always admire people who come to essentially face the firing line. I hope we can get some people to fire at you, however. The phone lines are open.
Let me just say, you know, I'm not a member of the citizen. I'm not a member of the citizen.
427-3772, and Mike, go ahead and respond.
I'm not a member of the Citizens Committee. If they made promises that they didn't keep, then you should have them in the air and pillory them. You know, that's between you and them. City of Santa Cruz has never run a winter campground. I've never supported the idea. I don't believe there are four members of the City Council, or for that matter, I'm not sure there's any members of the City Council that support that idea. You'll have to bring them on to see if they do have such a view. And I really think it's important to say that, you know, the Citizens Committee can make any agreement they like, but they don't get the right to decide whether or not we're going to run. They don't have a permit for it. The city is another voice here that has some impact on it. I don't think we misled anybody about that question ever.
Hi, Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're on the air with Mayor Michael Atkin and Uncle Robert here. But I'd like to point out is, if anybody knows out there whether you're hearing our station, give us a call. I think we've had some reports that the signal is not getting out. We can hear it here in the studio, but we can't hear it. Apparently, there's people who can't hear it outside. Hi, caller.
Yeah, hi. I live in East Santa Cruz, and it's coming in fine.
Oh, good.
That's good.
My question to the mayor is that, number one, your presence at Free Radio Santa Cruz is, in my mind, a very powerful political statement, and would you comment on that?
Sorry, say that again?
It's hard to hear you, caller.
Mayor of Santa Cruz's presence at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, is a very powerful political statement, in my opinion, and would you comment on that? What do you think about Free Radio?
I think people using whatever means they have to get to me and to reach out to people is a good idea. So, you know, basically supportive of it. I know for a while that Free Radio was actually interfering with other people's signal, and I thought that was really not right, and at least I haven't heard any complaints about it recently. So if you found some place to be on the dial that doesn't screw up somebody else's assigned frequency, I think it's great that there's an alternative voice going out there.
Thanks very much. That was my comment. I think it's a bold thing, and it's proactive. It shows what we can do locally. You made some comments earlier about local versus national in regards to the problems with homelessness and the like, and a lot can be done by politicians and leaders on a local basis that makes waves. And Santa Cruz, I think, should be very proud of its accomplishments towards raising the level of human dignity over the last several decades. And at that, I'll get off the air.
All right.
Thank you, and Mayor, for whatever small part I played in that, I appreciate the comment. I want to say, and this, you know, I'll throw the gauntlet down to Robert in a way and hope he'll have a chance to respond to it, which is, you know, I've spent a lot of time, and I don't make this just a personal thing, a number of people in Santa Cruz have spent a lot of time over the past 15 years building public support for a more positive attitude towards social services in general, and particularly around homeless issues. We came into a town when I first moved here in 1969 that had the police systematically beating the homeless, and I mean, when they were handcuffed in the back of cars and serious kinds of problems. I think our police force has become a lot more professional since that time, which is not to say that there are not, you know, occasionally abuses there are anywhere, but a real change from an attitude where basically there was tacit support for the police beating the homeless and systematically abusing them. And it took a while to change, and I think they were supported by the citizens in town in doing that, and I think it's taken us a while to actually get people in town to accept the idea of services. The first time we tried to approve services, there was reaction against any social services for the homeless. And we've made a real difference in this town, and we are one of the leading service providers in the country in terms of the level of service provided to homeless people. I would challenge Robert to go to some other town, just not somewhere else in the world, but go to Capitola go to Scotts Valley would be my first choice if I had to think a place where people are doing nothing. And go to those kinds of communities and do the kind of work that we did to change the way that people in those communities feel about homeless services. If every city in this country provided the level of service that the city of Santa Cruz provides, we wouldn't have anything like the homeless problem that we've got in this country. And it's easy to come to Santa Cruz and go after the most progressive city in the United States around homeless issues, and I think that's an easy shot. It would be a lot harder to go someplace and actually change popular opinion in some other town.
Actually, in front of you, Michael, is a petition to pardon me for a sentence of 2 months in jail that I picked up in San Francisco, whose policies, I have to admit, are much worse than those in Santa Cruz. Although the laws
are going to change with a new mayor there,
and will hopefully change with the new mayor. We'll see about that. But you know, I don't limit my activities to this particular town. But I'm concerned, and we are talking about this town. This is our town. I've been here for probably as long as you have. Maybe not. You were here in the early 70s. I wasn't. You're again, I think, ignoring the basic issue, which is, what about the masses of people who are illegal in Santa Cruz? And I'm gonna turn the mic over to my new co-host here, Celine Pascal, who has made her way through the rain to actually get to the studio. So, Celine, get in here and give Mike hell.
Thanks, Robert. And thanks, Mike. Sorry to be so late in getting here. And it sounds like I kind of came in on a cue, at least, that really interests me. Mike, as you know, I recently interviewed people on city council, and what are you pointing at?
I'm pointing at the phone. It's ringing.
Oh, you want to pick it up?
Yeah, let me pick it up here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, hi, Robert. It's Robert Lee and Celine. Good to hear your voice. Sorry to cut you off right when you was beginning to speak, but I just wanted to express my dislike of the mayor keep putting off the subject of the homeless situation, like we're doing everything here in Santa Cruz that nobody else is doing around the country. Citizens of this city are not interested in hearing some excuses like that. I know the mayor wouldn't have gotten in his position if he wasn't an elegant spokesperson for the status quo. And to believe the argument of such a person as one as he, you would have to believe in the principles of this system of government. And if you do, and you're complicit in the violations of human rights and crimes of this system. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't work, that you can't work within the system or without the system, lawfully or unlawfully, to effect change. Not that all sectors within the community are worth spending time or on or within to effect change.
Could I ask, is your argument that because I've been successful in like working in grassroots movements in town and gotten myself elected to public office, that proves that I must be the cause of the problems? Is that the argument here?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's exactly, you caught me right there.
Yeah, I think that is the argument.
Really?
Well, I'd like to talk about
that. So in other words, basically there's no possibility of success because anybody who would be successful at doing anything would have had to have sold out and obviously be part of the problem to have done so.
Well, once
so people
again,
should just either give up or they're part of the problem.
Once again, I'd like to comment that you wouldn't have got to the position you're at within the system if you weren't this elegant spokesperson. Although, you know, it's just words. I'd like to say that, you know, one time in this community there was a great social awareness and participation. Now, these days seem to be long gone. There's less community and less trust with each other.
What
the
was
reason
that
is that the government is intervening with invasive laws and so many aspects of life and society that brings about a mistrust and fear of the government.
Robert,
people tend to be less tolerant of each other, and in this type of uptight society that you're participating in creating.
Robert?
Yes.
Hi, this is Celine. I think the point that you were trying to make wasn't necessarily that that it's impossible to make change by being inside the government, that I think that you're talking about the difference between liberal reforms that modify the system as it is and a radical call for systemic social change and the differences of those two things.
You know, it's hard to hear you folks on the phone, so I may have misunderstood what the mayor's first comment was, but I think you're right in my assessment of that.
Right, and that what you're seeing is a need for systemic social change that isn't going to happen from within a system.
Absolutely, it's particularly in this community, and keep putting it off on some other place in the world or some other place in the state or some other place in the United States. I mean, these laws against the homeless are absolutely, they're not working. I mean, there are things that can be done. I mean, not that the city can do some of them, such as tax reform, affordable housing, access to health, and substance abuse care, and actual living wage jobs, which don't exist in this town.
Robert, can I hang up on you now and talk a little bit with Mike about these things?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
One of the things that I heard as I interviewed people for my thesis was that we had a lot of really good people doing the very best they could with the most amount of money that they had available, and that there was an implication that because this was the case, that the needs of homeless people were being met, that the services were good, and that this was, because this was the best in the country, and I'm not convinced it is, but people believe that it's the best in the country, therefore it's good and it's working. And what I kept seeing was something really different.
I've never said that. I've been very clear that the city of Santa Cruz, I do believe, provides more services than any other community, but they would not solve the homeless problem in Santa Cruz any more than anywhere else. And, you know, it's a problem of huge proportions. It has to do with virtually all the institutions in our society, and I've never represented, you know, it's fixed here, there's not a problem, we meet everybody's needs, so don't put those words in my mouth. I think, you know, there are people that have needs out there that we are not coming close to meeting, including the Vietnam veterans who want to live outside that were mentioned before. We don't solve their problem. We don't have an answer for them.
Well, I'm not meaning to say that you claimed ever to have solved the problem of homelessness, but that the city, I did take it to mean that the city of Santa Cruz in particular has done more to meet the needs of people who are homeless than any other city, and therefore people shouldn't be critical of the services being provided. And what I saw was that although the services were well intended, where you would have, you know, a telephone and an answering machine so people could get messages, showers, that they were so inadequate to meet the numbers of people that they were intended to serve, that they were rendered almost pointless in cases. So what I wanted to ask you is, would you as a city council member and now as mayor consider, since the problem is national, and I think you agree on that this is a national economic problem creating homelessness, would you consider a multi-city alliance to pressure the state for changes or to file a federal emergency declaration that would get this, to kick the problem up instead of squashing it down?
Well, a couple of things. First, I'd be happy to lead the charge, and to the implication that somehow we haven't been trying to do politics at the national and state level is, I think, misleading. I spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C., testifying in front of congressional committees, trying to bring attention to the country about this issue. There's a limit to what, you know, the little tail of one little town can do to everybody else, but I'd be thrilled to work with other cities to try and do that. I do that now through the League of California Cities and the National League of Cities and the National Conference of Mayors. You know, I'm sort of working in caucuses with the more progressive forces in those organizations. I also want to respond to Robert Lee is his name, the earlier caller's comment that somehow, or is at least interpreted by you, that the issue was that what we need is systematic change in the way the system works as a whole. I think we need systematic change. I think the capitalist system is wholly incapable of meeting the kinds of needs, not just for the homeless, but for lots of people that live in this society. I think the question comes down to one of strategy, and, you know, with a quick answer, which is all we have time for in a show like this. My view is that if you had some kind of an insurrectionary situation where everybody in the country was ready for a major revolution, violent or nonviolent, and everybody was like looking for answers and ready to like throw the whole thing over, then you could talk about basically challenging the whole system, working outside of the system, trying to get that kind of change at that kind of level. My experience is that the vast majority of people in the United States are often very unhappy with what's going on, but hardly prepared for radical or dramatic kinds of social change. And as a result, the way that you begin to work with people is through the system. That's not to say that people can't be doing educational work outside of the system, challenging the logic of capitalism. I would think that's a smart thing to be doing. But the idea that there is some place outside the system where you can come into contact with large numbers of people and change consciousness, which would be necessary for the kind of social change we need, or create the kinds of institutions that we need to change this place, is really a misunderstanding of where we're at. We're not on the brink of a revolution in this country.
We have a caller, and he may actually press on with that question. Caller, you finally got in here. You've been waiting for about 2 or 3 minutes. What's your question?
Good morning, Mayor Mike and Celine and Robert Norse.
Can you hear the caller?
No.
Hang on a second. Let's introduce yourself again.
Good morning. This is Robert Flory, and just to let you know, the signal's coming in loud and clear over on the west side of Santa Cruz.
Could you speak up a bit? It's hard to hear.
Good morning, Mayor Mike and Celine and Robert North.
Good morning, Robert.
Go ahead.
We can hear you.
All right, good. Yeah, I think my radio might have been turned up too high. Mayor Rodkin, you've been talking about how Santa Cruz has more social services per capita than any other city in the nation, possibly. And I just wanted to comment on that because when I was homeless, I didn't care about the fact that there were social services. I didn't want to depend on the government, on the city, the state, or the federal government. I didn't get food stamps. I didn't really care about the social services. What really concerned me was the social oppression that exists in the city of Santa Cruz and how there are all kinds of laws that specifically target poor people. There's, of course, the camping ban, which literally makes it illegal to sleep outdoors at night anywhere within the city of Santa Cruz. And then just recently, there are these new downtown ordinances, which in the media, they were being called some of the harshest ordinances in the nation, targeting panhandlers and people on the sidewalks. And I'm wondering how you justify voting in favor of those ordinances.
Sure, let me give you a quick response. The situation is that it may be that it's illegal in Santa Cruz to camp out, but and these are the quote harshest laws in the country. First of all, that's not true. There are lots of places that have much stronger laws, but let's deal with the reality, which is, you know, lots of places may not have a law against certain kinds of things, but don't try and sleep in Carmel, the city of Capitol, the city of Scotts Valley, most areas of the unincorporated area of the county, and so forth. So, I mean, the focus on somehow that we have some laws that we enforce in a particular way doesn't mean that the reality is that this is somehow a harsh community compared to what would happen to anybody who tried just to, like, exist on the streets in most communities of California. The reality in terms of the laws that we passed downtown, we did not make it illegal to panhandle. In fact, it is legal to panhandle in downtown Santa Cruz. There's not many communities that have that kind of an explicit law. What we did was say that there's certain kinds of panhandling that is so abusive of other people, and in fact self-defeating the panhandlers by driving away the people they'd want the money from, that we're not going to allow it in Santa Cruz. And just to be real explicit, that involves not approaching someone too close. You have to be 3 feet from them, which I think is a reasonable distance not to be in somebody's face. You can't gang up on somebody and extort money out of them, so you have to stand back, not in one person at a time ask for money, not surround somebody. You're not allowed to follow somebody down the street when they say no, you've got to take no for an answer. You're not allowed to panhandle people after dark, which in fact scares the hell out of people. And I think as a result, we have lots of people, you know, I get calls every day from the mayor, from people that are really unhappy that they get panhandled. Panhandling is not illegal in the city of Santa Cruz, and there's very few cities where they let you actually panhandle the way we do here. Our point is that people are not allowed to aggressively panhandle. You can't assault people and demand money from them. And I think those are, that's not saying that either, first of all, most of those laws are not addressed at all to the homeless, more to other people who are downtown street folks who are not necessarily homeless, often young people, who are very aggressively going after folks. And I think it's reasonable to control people's behavior in public space. It's not a matter of making it illegal to panhandle or exist. Sure.
Go ahead, Robert.
About the law that literally makes it illegal to sit on the sidewalk.
We had a law which no longer exists. It was repealed. So we don't have a law that makes it illegal to sit on the sidewalk in Santa Cruz.
Well, how can you justify, you haven't answered my question yet, and how do you justify voting in favor of these ordinances? Weren't these ordinances being promoted by the business community downtown who don't want to see poor people on the streets of Santa Cruz? Why did you vote for a law which was so obviously unconstitutional that it didn't even have to go beyond the local county court to be found unconstitutional?
Number one, that got reversed by a higher court, so it's unclear at this point whether it is or isn't unconstitutional to have a total sitting ban, but we don't have one, so it's sort of a moot point. My view is that those ordinances, you know, whoever backed them for whatever reason, were reasonable.
Well,
kinds
you voted
of
for them. I
absolutely.
Know why you
I'm
voted.
Trying to tell you why I voted for them. Because I think it's reasonable to control people's behavior in public spaces, that they not aggressively panhandle people, that they not go after people, that they not block the sidewalk. And the fact that there are ordinances at the state level that also prohibit assaults and so forth, you know, for example, we know that if you, the idea about not blocking the sidewalk, that ordinance, the state level law about that, means that you would literally have to, you know, be unable to step over somebody to be blocking the sidewalk. So we passed ordinances that try to control behavior at a different level, try to say you've got to be more civil than the state law requires you to be. But it doesn't stop somebody from sitting on the sidewalk and asking for money, walking up to somebody as long as you don't get closer than 3 feet, Yeah, but you need to
for a while.
And so I think that people should understand that there, I think there's a, I'll defend this, I'm proud of having voted for them. There's a reasonable controls and regulations on people's public behavior, and to treat as if what we're saying is you can't panhandle. If we're trying to drive the poor people out of Santa Cruz, we're doing a pretty poor job of it.
Can I jump in here for a minute? Because this is a point that I have found it's very complex, and it's got a lot of stuff in it that I think is pretty contradictory. On the one hand, when you talk about those ordinances, you or any other member of City Council that I've heard, I always hear it in the terms that you just described, aggressive panhandling, the kinds of behavior that a middle-class person would find most offensive, and not in terms of restrictions around how close to a business one's allowed to stand or not allowed to stand, or restrictions about where people are placed. And I think it's really important to talk about the function of law in our society, that we're accustomed to criminalizing behavior that's a threat to property or to personal well-being. And what those ordinances have done is to criminalize behavior that is neither of those things. It's peaceful behavior,
yeah,
for the most part.
Well, read the laws. The laws, in fact, criminalize getting too close to somebody when you're asking for money, ganging up on a person to ask for money, following them down the street after they say no. They don't make it illegal to ask for money.
It also makes it illegal
to block doorways, to stand in front of places.
To stand near a doorway, Mike, not just block a doorway, but to be near it.
Down the sidewalk. So now, go to downtown Santa Cruz. These laws have been in place for a year and a half now. Go to downtown Santa Cruz and answer the question for me. Have we somehow prohibited people from panhandling?
Mike.
Have we made it illegal for people to sit on the sidewalk? Because it's going on every day.
What?
So it's like, at this point, to talk about people's motives, or claim that somehow we were making certain behavior illegal when it's going on every day and is clearly legal, it's an unfair criticism.
But it's not an unfair criticism. If you take it to a deeper level, what laws do is not just address the problem at hand, but they institutionalize attitudes and beliefs about the people. And so when you create a law that says it's illegal for people to sleep in the open at night, mm-hmm. it criminalizes not just the behavior of sleeping, but it makes the person who falls asleep appear to be a dangerous person, that they're a criminal.
Yeah,
it creates the social segregation that parallels the economic segregation. And part of what I want, and what I think some of the listeners want, is a society, is a civic leadership that somehow leads the way to a broader sense of community rather than continually restricting it. That these laws have a really strong impact on the middle class beliefs about homeless people. And that can't be denied. You can walk downtown and say, oh, see, everybody's still around. But what becomes more deeply entrenched is the belief that middle class people have that homeless people are unsafe to be around. That it's dangerous to see, when you see someone asleep on the sidewalk, that's a dangerous thing instead of a tragic thing.
Well, before you respond, Mike, we have Robert Flory here who's been trying to get a word in. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, and well, I'd just like to make one final comment, perhaps, before I hang up, I guess. And that's that it occurs to me that ordinances like the camping ordinance and the downtown ordinances are a way of using the law to turn a social problem into a criminal problem, and that this isn't going to help at all. And it may be that the businesses downtown are worried about their profits and they don't want to see poor people downtown. Well, that's too bad. The fact is, we have poor people in our society, and we can't hide them. We have to allow them to exist in our society. And if you want to operate a business in a public place, well, you damn well better have to expect to tolerate the public. And if you don't like the condition that the public is in, if you don't like some portions of the public, well, criminalizing portions of the public isn't a solution. You're going to have to find some way of affecting social change that doesn't criminalize large portions of the public. So I'd like Mike Rotkin to give us some evidence that his constituents are give some evidence to his constituents that he is going to be a force for social change in Santa Cruz, and that he's going to make a mark in the fight against bigger businesses, against capitalism and business interests, and also make a mark against the oppression of the poor, and how he is going to do that as his in his position of mayor of Santa Cruz.
But before he does that, I want to make a response here, because I'm sure that could be the whole subject of a 15-minute speech if we wanted to go on to that.
No, I haven't been unreasonable.
No, you've been fine. You've been fine, Mike. But the problem is that you Mike tends to give us a whole series of statements in a sentence, as do I, I'm sure, which really has to be examined carefully. The panhandling law, only three sections of the 23 sections of that law have anything to do with aggressive panhandling. The rest has to do with where you are on the sidewalk, whether you are sitting down or standing up, whether you are in a group of more than one, whether you are talking to somebody in a car, or whether you're making any request, however peaceful, for anything of value after dark. I mean, that is a preposterous law. There is all, and Mike says, well, you know, we just wanted to make it a little more civil than the state law. The fact is that since the Blair decision in 1991, panhandling laws have kind of been on hold because they're a violation of the First Amendment at the moment on a federal, in terms of a federal court decision. Blocking the sidewalk is not the issue. This is Mike and I got into this about 6-8 months ago on, I guess it was Community Perspectives. The issue is not blocking the sidewalk. There are laws against blocking the sidewalk. Mike says they're not clear enough or that they require too much action by the police, but the police can use them if they want, and they can be a potent threat because a lot of people who are the victims of these laws, or let's say the appropriate persons who are detained under these laws, are going to move when the cops say move. These new laws are designed to get rid of deadheads downtown and are prone to selective enforcement and are in fact selectively enforced. And it is, to me, a sad commentary on a man who proclaims himself a socialist that he has voted for almost unanimously, with one person dissenting, for a law that prohibited sitting anywhere on the sidewalk. Anywhere on the sidewalk in a downtown area, not blocking the sidewalk, sitting down on the sidewalk. You voted for that, Mike. And whether it's been thrown out or not, you voted for it. And I want to hear the justification for that vote. And I'd like to hear you apologize to the community for that vote, which in my mind produced one man's broken ribs, another woman's miscarriage, violence, and all kinds of police abuse downtown on May 11th, 1994, when there was a huge police attempt to stop people from sitting on the sidewalk.
Go ahead. I don't want to hear about social services in Santa Cruz. What I want to know is what's going to be done to stop social oppression of the poor in Santa Cruz.
So let's talk about social oppression of the poor, and I'm going to hang up and let Mike and Celine get into it. Mike, go ahead.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Robert. Again, the notion that somehow the city of Santa Cruz is passing laws that are trying to criminalize otherwise reasonable behavior is simply not borne out by the facts. The issue of what, in terms of what actually is being prohibited downtown, the notion that there's massive selective enforcement, if that were the case, then why are all these people sitting around downtown Santa Cruz day after day, the same people and then additional people? It's not being borne out by the facts of the case. In fact, it's easier to sit on the downtown streets of Santa Cruz than any place else that I've been. And I get hit by this daily by conservatives who don't, in fact, want people sitting down there. And I say, look, people, as just was said by Robert, people have a right to be downtown. It's not like it's a place for only people with money, or that only if you're going to go shopping do you have a right to be there. And as much as some people might not like to look at other people, might not like the way some other people look, that's unfortunate. That's just, you know, it's tough. We don't have the ability to control that. I wouldn't look for the ability to control that. What we do have is the ability to control people's behavior. And when Robert says, you know, hey, look, you know, it's outrageous. They only let one person approach you at a time. I'm sorry. I've seen people down there where gang up on someone trying to panhandle them, and it's extorting money from people. It's outrageous. And I think that what government has the responsibility to do is provide some clear distinction between behavior that's out of line, that does scare people, that does make places unsafe for folks, and that kind of behavior which is reasonable and which people will have to learn to tolerate, namely people that are different than them, people asking them for money, and so forth. As far as the sitting on the sidewalk law, I felt it was okay to pass a law against sitting on the sidewalk because the city's provided like lots of spaces for people to sit on benches. We realized, you know, that basically was not something that was supported by the people of Santa Cruz, and that we don't want to have, that people would like to be able to sit on the sidewalk, so we got rid of the law. The fact that people are now prohibited from sitting in certain places on the sidewalk, I think, creates a free flow of traffic in downtown Santa Cruz, allows people to walk on the sidewalks easily. I don't think anybody with a straight face can tell you that you're not able to sort of hang out in downtown Santa Cruz, panhandle people for money if you do it in a reasonable way, sit on the sidewalk in lots of places, set up a table to solicit people for various causes in lots of places on the sidewalk.
Not after dark, man.
And after dark, I think when people come up to strangers in this society, given what's going on,
and say
to people, you know, we're going to we want your money in the dark. It scares the hell out of people, and it makes an unsafe situation. And unfortunately, the reality is, since Prop 13 passed in California, the cities get most of their money for all the things they do from sales taxes. And it's not just the merchants. we're concerned for their bottom line profits or something. It's the reality that local governments in California need a certain amount of sales tax to be able to provide the social programs we want to provide, to buy the open space we want to buy, and all the other things that we think are important.
So this is a business-oriented idea.
No, it's not a business-oriented idea. It has to do with, as somebody who's elected to public office, I've got to ask myself, where do the revenues come to provide health care for people, to provide daycare, senior meal programs, all the things that really do matter, as well as homeless services, and those things come from sales taxes. So we cannot afford to have a downtown that people feel is not a comfortable place to be. Beyond that, it's critical that there's people that live downtown, senior citizens live in senior citizens that live downtown, other people that live there, and again, this is not like people are driving the homeless off of the mall or driving the street people off of the mall. In downtown Santa Cruz, there's lots of those folks down there. I welcome them being there. They have every right to be there, as long as they don't behave in ways that make it unsafe or uncomfortable for other people to be there. And I think we've achieved that balance in downtown Santa Cruz with some exceptions and there's exceptions in either direction. There are people who are still aggressively panhandling that I would like to see controlled by the law because they obviously aren't controlling themselves. And I also think there's some people down there who are expressing disgust at somebody just because of the way they look, and I wish that they would cool it. So, this is nothing's perfect. Laws can't make everybody behave the way they should, but I think we're achieving a pretty good balance in downtown Santa Cruz.
Rather than addressing this through laws, what about taking on a leadership role that would bring together people who are homeless with people who are not homeless to diffuse the situation, to provide some education, to reduce the amount of fear that people have? These laws reinforce the fear that middle-class residents have. They don't make it safer for them. It actually heightens their fear. I was listening to people on the bus. A Christmas tree had been vandalized, and someone said, oh, it must have been a group of kids that did that. And the bus driver said, no, I'm sure it's some homeless person. Why?
Why? Because everything that this bus driver encounters tells him that people who are homeless are dangerous. Just as a way for the other person, youth are dangerous. And I think that there's a lot that can be done if you want to take a radical perspective in government in terms of educating people rather than criminalizing behaviors.
I think you got the wrong target here. I've knocked on 3/4 of the doors in the city of Santa Cruz. I talk to people regularly about these issues and confront their hostility towards the homeless, do education around this, go on radio programs, on TV, write articles in the newspaper, and confront this kind of stuff directly. And so to sort of say that I'm not doing enough, it's like other people need to join in this effort. And to say that the laws are constructing these views, I think, is missing the point. People have this kind of hostility from virtually every media source in our society, from the kinds of stuff they get all over the place, and to blame, say that somehow it's the laws we've passed in downtown Santa Cruz is making people feel like the homeless are the problem, is not dealing with the reality. People have those attitudes. What's happening is we're trying to say it doesn't matter whether you're homeless or whether you're somebody who lives in a house in Santa Cruz. It doesn't matter where you come from. There's certain kinds of standards of behavior in public space that are reasonable for people to follow. And I've been very clear over and over again in lots of forums talking to the people throughout Santa Cruz, whatever their political views, in saying, let's not blame the homeless. Let's not treat all the homeless like somehow they're all the same and they're causing all kinds of problems.
For example,
just yesterday one of the conservative radio stations in Santa Cruz in the newspaper saying to people throughout this county that they shouldn't be treating the homeless as if somehow they're all criminals. I think it's outrageous that people do so. So it's not that I have been doing public education. It's not a reasonable charge against me.
It is a reasonable charge against the city government.
I think your mic has crashed. Speak again, Slane, and kind of summarize what you said, because I think we missed what you just said for the last 5 minutes.
No. The point that I had made was that people's fears and concerns and prejudices and stereotypes about homeless people get reinforced when a city passes laws that criminalize behaviors that are characteristic of behaviors homeless people commonly engage in. So that by criminalizing, panhandling in certain areas, restricting panhandling like it's a dangerous thing, by criminalizing sitting on the sidewalk, by regulating behaviors associated with poor people, that it somehow makes poor people seem like a criminal element simply by the fact that they're poor, which leads people like a bus driver that I met the other day to, when a tree had been damaged, he immediately leapt to the conclusion it must have been a homeless person who damaged the tree because Now, he had those attitudes. I'm not saying, Mike, that those attitudes came about from the laws, but the business communities around the country have a large influence on the media and have been really significant in putting out a really negative rap on homeless people. And general people pick this up, and when you create laws, you institutionalize attitudes, and I think that's a really crucial thing.
You just said, you know, certain kinds of behaviors that are characteristic of homeless people, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. I have said over and over again that the vast majority of people who are misbehaving in downtown Santa Cruz are not homeless people. I reject the notion that it's the homeless people that are ganging up on people to panhandle them, that it's homeless people that are responsible for following people down the sidewalk.
Sitting and sleeping,
I think that the people who are basically obnoxious, and there are some of them in downtown Santa Cruz, tend not to be the homeless people. They tend to be young people in this community who have homes, who are not even poor necessarily. A lot of times they're taking the money that they get from Panhandle and using it for things. It's not that they don't have money, and they're being obnoxious. And I've been clear that these ordinances are not directed against the homeless. And your statement reinforces people's sense that it's the homeless people that are out there doing that. I don't
believe
for a minute that's who's doing that kind of stuff. I've never said it. I don't believe it.
When I interviewed people, again, I go back to this interview that I just recently completed with merchants and city council members, and across the board, I was told that the downtown ordinances do not affect homeless people, that they did not target homeless people. And what I found when I pursued that question, was that people said, well, you know, the people who you see hanging out every day are not really homeless people. The truly homeless people are not visible because they're embarrassed to be homeless. They're busy trying to get back into the system. They're, for one reason or another, basically not visible. And all of the people who you commonly see, you know, at Safeway or on Pacific Avenue, those people are not truly homeless. So if we create laws that regulate their behavior, we're really not targeting the behavior of homeless people, because homeless people don't engage in those things. Truly homeless people don't hang out.
Well,
they hide.
Let me just say, I don't think that any statement that says all homeless people anything is going to be accurate. My only statement was that the majority of the people involved in the behaviors that people are finding obnoxious or troubled by are not homeless people. Some of the people that are out there clearly must be homeless, but the notion that somehow the majority of them are, or that that's where the trouble's coming from, I reject it. I've said it, you know, I don't just say it when I go out to talk to, you know, people from the left or a progressive radio station. I say it when I talk to conservatives. I think it's mistaken to think it's the homeless that are causing the problems in downtown Santa Cruz.
We're not talking about the problems. We're talking about behaviors like sleeping and sitting, which are, in fact, innocent behaviors until they're made criminal because businesses prefer to have, I believe, a poverty-free zone around them, or at least a zone that looks fashionable and upper-middle class. That's really the reality that Robert Flory was trying to get you address yourself to, that I don't think you did. That's the reality that Celine is trying to get yourself to address yourself to, which I don't think you did. And I think that for years, I've been trying to get you to address yourself to the realities of, again, sleep. When I proposed, for instance, under the question about the sleeping ban, it's not a question of letting people sleep anywhere and everywhere, but let people have legal places somewhere. You have perpetually distorted that issue into, oh, you just want people to be able to sleep in anywhere the hell they want. But that, in fact, has not been what I've requested. I said people have to sleep after 11 o'clock at night. And your actions on the city council throughout the 80s and since 1992 and up to the present have been essentially to keep it criminal for the vast majority of homeless people in Santa Cruz to fall asleep. And there is no dispute on that issue.
No,
it
there is. The vast majority of homeless people in Santa Cruz take advantage of many services that are provided here. The vast majority do. Some small
Palmer
number of,
so
homeless,
denies
some
that.
Small number
so
of homeless
of
the, people are not able to take advantage
Palmer
of those
so
things.
So of the open-air shelter, Mike Rotkin tells me that if you consider the number of beds available and the number of spaces available, even in the open-air shelter, before you backed up the Citizens Committee for the Homeless in breaking their word and closing it, even at that point, a majority of people did not have a legal place to sleep. So either you're not informed or you're lying to people about this issue. I'm sorry. It has to be said, because I've said this to you time and time again. The majority of homeless people do not have a legal place to sleep in Santa Cruz. I made the same point to you in 1988.
Robert, you're saying it shouting it loudly doesn't make it any more true. You could say it quietly. I still would disagree.
I'm sorry.
With
I get passionate about this, Mike. The same thing was true in 1988, and you made exactly the same argument. You ignored it. You dismissed it. You said it was a national issue, and in 1988 it was even more true.
Robert, if I were to say it was a national issue and therefore we don't have to do anything about it, then I would be subject to the criticism you're making. When you go after the city that provides more services than anybody else...
You're the mayor of this city, Mike. Let's talk about this city. We are talking about, you have the power. You are the fourth vote that could change the sleeping ban so that certain areas of the city, commercial areas, people could sleep legally. You could do this if you had the will, if you had the desire, if you had a real concern with the needs of the majority of the homeless population, you could make this choice. You have not. I don't think you will.
Robert,
I really regret that.
Robert, let me just ask. Can you, with a straight face, tell me that you don't think that Santa Cruz, for whatever reason, combination of its natural qualities, the weather, its location, and the services being provided here, does not tend to draw homeless people to this community? Now, that's not an argument that we shouldn't provide services. Don't put words in my mouth about it. I think we need to provide services.
Can I have a clean answer to that?
Let me just finish the question. To deny that these folks are being drawn to Santa Cruz because of the natural and social amenities that are provided here, and that somehow the homeless themselves don't deny that reality, because when they get up in front of the city council, they say, this is the best place to be when you're homeless. Now, not everybody believes that. And again, we don't provide all the services people need. We're not solving everybody's problem. But that somehow to represent Santa Cruz as a mean-spirited town is off-base in terms of the homeless's own experience here.
But this is, again, a sidetrack from the issue that there's an estimated 2,500 to 3,000 people who are homeless in the county, and there are 350 shelter beds. That's the fact, right?
Majority?
So,
not really.
So that means that
there's a lot more than 350 shelter beds, but because you're leaving out all the small programs, of which there are many that provide shelter beds for homeless folks.
That's the number of beds that I've heard polling all the service providers.
There's 300 beds in the two armories, 150 in Santa Cruz, 150 in Watsonville. There's about 56 beds in the church shelter, so right off, you're under the number. There's about 50 beds that are provided in the New Life shelter out on the other side. There's another 35 beds that are provided at the River Street shelter. So right off, you got your number about half. Beyond that, I would argue there's probably another 100 beds in a number of different particular little programs that exist for the homeless. I'm not going to argue that we have enough beds for every homeless person.
The point is, we have
beds that are not being used by people in the city of Santa Cruz.
I think that's a very
important
point.
The shelters are not full in the city of Santa Cruz.
That's a very important point.
And so to represent that somehow we are not providing enough shelter beds for people is bullshit.
Wait a minute. If you say, even if you were to say that you have 1,000 shelter beds instead of 350, that still would leave almost 2,000 people without shelter. The fact that there are shelter beds open doesn't say to me there aren't homeless people, but nobody wants to use those shelters. Why aren't they being used? That's the more appropriate question.
Because there's homeless people who think they have the right to tell what kind of services they're going to get, and I reject that.
Sounds like you're blaming the homeless again.
I don't think a particular city has an obligation to provide people the particular kinds of services they might like to have. I think it's an unrealistic expectation.
Well, then you can't say that you're providing services for everybody. What you're providing services that are unacceptable for
people.
Hang on,
let me. Some of the homeless might like to have.
Here's a homeless person, folks. Let's let her in on this conversation. Hi there.
Hi, I'm homeless, and I think I do have a right to decide which services I use. What you want to do really is control people. You want to make people pay rent, go to work, you know, participate in the capitalist system, and take away any place that they might possibly stick on the earth without giving somebody money for it. How about ending the camping ban? How about letting people camp in backyards? How about letting people sleep in their car? If you're tired and you are driving, the law says you're supposed to pull over and sleep. And we can't do that. We can't do it in Santa Cruz. We can't do it in San Mateo County. We can't do it whenever the next one is in the south. You know, every place. There's nowhere to sleep legally.
Actually,
and, you know, I do not want to go to a concentration camp shelter where there's rats crawling around. I'm not going to go to some, you know, program where you have to show up at 5 p.m. and you get split up from your family.
Excuse me, the idea that there are rats crawling around our shelters is an outrageous
slur. The open-air shelter had rats.
Oh, the open-air shelter may have had rats, absolutely. There's no argument about that. But the indoor shelters in Santa Cruz, the National Guard armories, and the churches do not have rats.
Okay, but you do have to get there at 5 p.m.
No, you could be, if you have work, you could be there as late as 9 o'clock at night.
Okay, do I get to stay with my family there? If I'm a couple, if I have a child?
Does the city of Santa Cruz have an obligation to provide housing for you and your family?
No, but you have an obligation to let me be somewhere. If I want to sleep in my van, you know, why do I get a $180 ticket? Why do I have to go do community slavery because I slept for a night?
Because any of the places you might choose to sleep actually probably belong to somebody.
Where? Either the streets? Belong to everybody. If I'm sleeping in my car on the streets, I've paid my taxes for that.
Well, I mean, the problem that you've got at this point
and
is...
And I think, you know, I think... Ahead. Can I finish? I think that this is a way we could really address this problem locally, to just at least modify the camping ban, to allow people in backyards, to allow people in vehicles. You don't have to let them out everywhere in every park, but, you know, at least modify it. And we could do that locally, and that would help. It would decriminalize a bunch of people every night. And, you know, you were talking about the Vietnam veterans who don't want to be controlled either. You know, most people don't want to be controlled. And all the shelter situations are really interested in is controlling people.
You know, one of the things that I found that would support that point of view is that in interviewing people, I've been told that you could go to any of... go to the fire department, go to the police department, go to any county service place, and many of the people on city council were aware of places within the city where numbers of homeless people camp on a regular basis. And I was told that this was perfectly fine, that they were camping in these places because they were out of sight and not causing a problem, and that the camping ban is enforced on a complaint basis. Now, I don't understand why the sleep of... you know, a poor person needs to depend upon the goodwill of another person, but that's the way it's set up, so it maintains that progressive veneer in the society here. But a lot of people, a lot of public officials are aware of literally hundreds of people camping illegally in the city as it stands.
I also want to say, I'm not often an advocate for Mike Rutkin, as you can hear from the passion of which I speak, but Mike has apparently forgotten that this summer, there was an exception passed to the camping ban that theoretically allows you, if you get into the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, insofar as you go down there, you can sleep in a church. There can be no more than 3 vehicles per church parking lot in the night. So theoretically, depending on the number of churches involved, and I don't know how many are, I know at least 1 or 2 are, so that's at least 6 or 8, 6 or 9 spots. You can go there, but that in no way, just like busing 43 or 47 or 49 lucky campers to New Brighton Beach, in no way has any impact on what happens to the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other homeless people.